meander down a country road in our region, there's a reasonably good chance you'll see oak trees. Several different species of oaks are common in the region. And there's a whole ecosystem with oaks at the center, the oak savanna, like Savannah the city, but without the H. It is a landform common in our Mediterranean climate. Like any ecosystem, it's home to some creatures not found in other places. And like many ecosystems, there's less of oak savanna now as people build roads and houses in what was country. Klamath Bird Observatory is one partner in a group of organizations seeking to restore oak savanna. That is the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network, or KSON, as we go through another acronym here. Caitlin Gillespie is a research biologist at the Klamath Bird Observatory and the coordinator of KSON. Thanks for joining us today, Caitlin.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
We also welcome back to the program Jamie Gillespie, who is the science director at the Klamath Bird Observatory. Welcome back, Jamie.
Thank you.
So, Jamie, do oak savannas tend to get overlooked while other ecosystems are praised and preserved and rehabbed?
I think that used to be the case. With the northern spotted owl being such a prominent feature on our landscape here in the Pacific Northwest, conifer trees have been at the center of our attention. But more recently, people have been thinking a lot about the oak habitats and the critters that live there as well, and there's a lot of momentum right now for doing oak conservation and restoration.
So the partners who are working together as the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network, or KSON, have been at this for a while, but it's become a bit more formal in the last couple of years. Can you walk us through the initial joining of forces and then how it's become more formal?
Yeah, the key partners of KSON include federal partners, the Forest Service, the BLM, NRCS, Fish and Wildlife Service Partners Program, and then there's a number of other NGOs in addition to KBO. So we have Lomakatse Restoration Project and the Nature Conservancy. Those partners have been working together on oak restoration for a decade or more, but we formalized into the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network around 2011. And then in 2015, we became kind of a more formal structure, having an MOU and
Memorandum of Understanding.
Thank you. Apologies for the acronyms. And that's when we had our first public outreach events as well. So kind of consistent with the additional momentum in oak restoration was the building of that partnership.
So Caitlin, tell us a bit about what kinds of creatures live in oak savannas, why they are so interesting to look at and why important for us to preserve them.
Oak ecosystems in general have really high biodiversity, and there are more than 300 vertebrate species actually that are associated with oaks, and there are also a lot of native plants. At Klamath Bird Observatory, we think a lot about the birds, so think about species like oak titmouse and acorn woodpecker, and species like that are often associated with oaks. But in general, there are lots of species.
300 vertebrate species, is that a lot for any ecosystem?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, so a very, very high diversity then. And then how does that compare, for example, with conifer systems? Do we have any side-by-sides on those?
I'm not really sure. I'm not as familiar with conifer systems.
I think that the amount of species that are really specific to oak habitats are higher. So you have a higher percentage of species that aren't generalists, species that really require the oak habitats.
All right. So when we talk about the 300 vertebrate species, are those mostly birds then, Caitlin?
A lot of them are birds, also mammals, reptiles, amphibians.
What kinds of mammals? Give us some examples of other critters that are out there.
Well, everything eats acorns. That's what's so cool about oaks. That's why they're so great for wildlife. And so you think about, bears and deer and smaller mammal species, too.
All right, everything eats acorns. And how much adaptability in any of these creatures to live in other ecosystems? It sounds like without the acorns, you don't see a lot of these species.
Right. So acorns are really important.
There's a lot of different things that go on in oak ecosystems that make them the home to so many critters. So in addition to the food source of the acorns, they also have a lot of different types of habitat features. So one of the things that's really interesting about oak trees themselves is that they have the ability to compartmentalize disease and death. And so very different from a conifer tree, if an oak tree has an injury to a limb, it can have an injured limb indefinitely. And so within that injured limb, you can have cavities for birds, and you can have a lot of insects that go in there. And so you create all this whole little kind of micro ecosystem that goes on within these oak trees themselves. That's one of the things that makes them unique.
I was going to ask about the cavities. That is a big part of all this then. I mean, there's lots of habitat in pretty much any oak tree.
Yeah, there's a high density of cavities in oak habitats.
We're talking about oak savanna restoration with Jamie Stevens, the Klamath Bird Observatory Science Director, and Caitlin Gillespie, who is the coordinator of the Klamath-Siskiyou Oak Network and a research biologist at the Klamath Bird Observatory. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Can you lay out, one of you, what the basic features are, the general features of any oak savanna, trees aside? I mean, we get it that there are oaks there, so let's start with what kinds of oaks and then what other kinds of vegetation and features you find there.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So in our region here in Southern Oregon and Northern California, we have a gradient of oak habitat types that differs from the area to the north of here. So the oak savanna, which is typically several really dynamic large oak trees with a grassland understory, and that understory component is critically important, and it's one of the aspects, if we talk later about restoration, that we think a lot about, how to keep the grasses healthy under those oak trees. One of the unique things we have in this region is oak chaparral. So chaparral is commonly known as like buckbrush or deerbrush. It's that really thick shrub that we see across the hillsides, and it makes for just another unique system, different habitats for different critters. And then we have oak types that go into having higher density of oak trees. So oak woodlands that are primarily white oak will just occur where you have a lot of oak trees and less of that understory. Then we have California black oak, which occurs more with the conifer trees. And so if you go from the valley up into the mountains, if you're familiar with Table Rocks, it's this perfect example of how you have that grassland and then you have the oaks transitioning. And at the top of the Table Rock, you have an oak conifer system.
All right. So a bit of a blending along the way, but the oaks are the consistent thing all the way through.
Exactly.
Does it matter if the trees are different sizes and ages? I'm wondering, for example, how much you avoid even-aged plantations of oak trees as people for diversity in conifer forests look for different species, ages, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's important to have different ages to know that your oak ecosystem is healthy. So if we don't have recruitment of younger oaks, that's something that we should be aware of and think about. But it really differs throughout the Pacific Northwest as well, whether or not oak recruitment is a problem, the growing of the saplings and getting the saplings to take hold. But as far as a structural difference, the age of the oaks, they're slower growing, and they don't get nearly as large. And so the difference between a 40-year-old oak and a 300-year-old oak is often hard to see for the casual observer. So it's different from conifer in that aspect.
And we can make some assumptions here that just general encroachment of humanity as we build out into the countryside is one of the major issues. Is that, in fact, the major threat to oak savannas?
Certainly, direct loss to oak habitats historically was the threat. So throughout the Pacific Northwest, the numbers are hard to wrap your head around. But in Oregon, in some areas, we've lost 95% of the oak woodlands. In California, up to 33%. We think our region is probably somewhere in the middle of that. So the direct loss has had a lot of repercussions historically. But more recently, the larger threat here in our region is the lack of natural ecological processes. Oak ecosystems are adapted for fire, and so fires keep oak systems healthy. So one of the things that happens when there isn't natural fire in an oak ecosystem is that conifers that don't do so well in fire can grow quickly and overtop the oaks, shade them out, and the oaks die. So that's one of the things our restoration really focuses on, removing that encroachment of the conifer.
That was the next question, was about conifer encroachment. Okay, that is a thing. All right, but it's not like the march of the conifers or anything. It's just that the situation is better for the conifers to grow because the fire is not present.
Exactly.
Grab your headphones, if you would. We have a call for you. We're talking to Jamie Stevens and Caitlin Gillespie at the Klamath Bird Observatory, one of the partners in the Klamath-Siskiyou Oak Network. We're talking about restoring oak savanna. Here's a call from Jeff in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jamie. This is Jeff Gilman. Something I've noticed in oaks is in the springtime, there's a little green caterpillar that hangs down out of the oaks on a thread. And when those caterpillars appear, sort of the neotropical birds. And I've seen a very good correlation between the two. I'm wondering if you know about those caterpillars.
All right, let's pick this up with our guests. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Caitlin, you want to take that on? I saw a nod of recognition for both of you.
Oh, well, that's just, it's a well-known phenomenon that the emergence of invertebrates in the spring, like caterpillars, is correlated with the arrival of migrants because they need that food source. And so the timing of those things is something that's well known in avian ecology.
Let's talk about restoration. I mean, if you're talking about trying to make sure that oak savanna is present for future generations, what are some of the steps? And when you formed the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network, I have to believe you laid out some sort of general goals and some specific steps for getting there. So I assume then that if you've been together since 2011, you've been doing some of this work already.
We have, and there is really an amazing track record of success with this partnership. Within the last 5 years, through the collective efforts of those partners, we've restored over 3,000 acres of oak habitats, leveraging over $3 million of federal and non-federal resources. And more recently, an additional $4.5 million is currently secured and being put on the ground for additional oak restoration of about 3,500 acres. And I do want to make a little plug that this work is happening on both federal, but also most of the work that I'm speaking of right now is happening on private lands. And so there's some amazing landowner incentive programs through the existing program in Siskiyou County, California, and then specifically here in Oregon, in the regions of the Klamath, Colstein, and Table Rocks area. So if there's landowners that are interested in doing restoration on their land, they can find more information on the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network website.
So what kinds of incentives then?
There's financial incentives through the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS's Farm Bill program. And there's a number of different programs that are for wildlife enhancement, as well as a lot that are for agriculture and good practices on the ground. And so those incentives are always there. But when we get particular pots of funding like this one through the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, it allows there to be a higher part of the cost from the federal government and a lower cost to the landowner. I don't know those specifics off the top of my head, but we can get you in touch with the right people if you get in touch with us.
All right. Was that the reference to the recent grant that you got?
Yeah.
Okay. And how did that one work again?
It's a cost share program. So if private landowners are interested in doing restoration, they can at all times go and work with both NRCS as well as Fish and Wildlife Service Partners Program, which also works on private land. And the federal government will provide some of the funding to do that work on your private land. And when we get specific pots of money for these focus areas, it makes the cost share better for the private landowner, that it will cost less for them to do that work than it would through a typical program.
So when people want to go through the restoration process, I mean, there are some tools that probably are a little less popular these days, like setting your land on fire, for example. So what are some of the steps in restoring an oak savanna, and what are like the optimum conditions to begin with?
Mm-hmm. So we have a great landowner guide available as well. I want to point you to the website as well if you're interested in the details. You need to think about what type of oak habitat you have. I talked about that gradient of oak habitats. Once you identify what you have on your land, you want to think about whether there is a threat, because we have a lot of healthy oak woodland around here. It certainly doesn't all need action. And so are there conifer trees encroaching, or are there other landowner goals like reduction of wildfire risk around a home? And then you want to think about how you can align the oak restoration goals with the private landowner goals. And then from there, there's a number of techniques that involve removing conifers, removing shrubs sometimes. We have a whole nother thing to say about that. We are actually introducing fire on a lot of these landscapes. So prescribed fire is becoming much more prominent. And both here in Southern Oregon as well as Northern California recently, there were some legal changes in 2017 in Northern California that are going to promote oak restoration as far as just some of the complexities of it. And we're thinking a lot about getting fire on the landscape in both regions.
Caitlin Gillespie, can you give us some idea of if there's a one particular animal that shows up in oak savannas when they're particularly healthy? Is there like a best indicator species of the health of an oak savanna?
Oak titmouse is a good example of an oak
and even though it's called a titmouse,
like,
it is a bird.
It is a bird. Mm. Yes. We think of that as a pretty good indicator of a healthy oak system, because that's it's an oak obligate, so it requires oak species specifically.
Have there been any real surprises in some of these restoration projects? Animals you might not have anticipated showing up in these restored habitats.
I'm not sure. I haven't been here very long.
So we've got a great study going on at Klamath Bird Observatory. So one of the roles that we play in the partnership is to do a lot of monitoring using birds as indicators of the system, like Caitlin was touching on with the oak titmouse, but also doing monitoring to make sure that the restoration we're doing is having the desired outcomes. So we can go out and look at the restoration afterwards and say, yeah, it looks healthier. The oak trees look more intact like we expect, but it's important to measure the other aspects of the ecosystem. So we have a really extensive monitoring program going on right now where we're looking at what birds are using these restoration areas both before and after restoration. But you're going to have to invite us back in about 9 months to get the results on that. It's been a 6-year monitoring project. We're going to finish our last year of monitoring in spring of 2018. So the results are yet to come. But anecdotally, our surveyors are saying they're seeing the shifts in the species that we expect.
Are there particular elevations where oak savannas tend to be most present? I mean, is there a sweet spot for oak savannas at 1,800 feet or 2,500 feet or something and facing north or south or any of that stuff?
I guess I would circle back to the explanation I had earlier about the gradients of oak habitat. So oaks are most dominant in the valleys, and as you move up in elevation, you're going to transition through those different types. And as far as the north and south facing slopes, that often has more to do with the other plants that are inhabiting the oak. So it has more to do with kind of what's in the understory.
Okay, so a lot of work still ahead, obviously, and as you mentioned, we can check back in 9 months and see how one of the major projects is going. We're talking about oak savanna restoration with the folks from the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network. These folks on the studio with me are from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Jamie Stevens is the science director. Caitlin Gillespie is a research biologist at KBO and the coordinator of the KS Oak Network, or KSON for short. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.